Kevin, have you ever killed anything?
Yes. And I didn't do a very good job of it because I abandoned halfway through.
Oh my God.
But when I was about 8 or 9, I went fishing in Crosshaven. We caught mackerel. Great day, like fishing off the rocks. And you throw them into a bucket of water so they're still kind of alive. And then my cousin's dad, Liam, God rest him, he was saying, take the heads off the fish. And so I had the knife and I was cutting the head off the fish while it was still alive.
Yeah.
And I stopped halfway through because it was giving me such the willies and I hated it. And he took it off me like as if you're a bit of a wimp. And he, whack, took the head straight off. That still sticks out to me. I don't like killing things. I just like to kill it on mic.
You did. Should have done it Donegal style where you just put the fish between your teeth and just go, and just yank that head right off. I tried to kill an insect up in our old farmhouse in Donegal there the other day, and it was an insect I'd never seen before. Went down on it with my foot, and when I raised my boot, it just looked at me like, what was that? Fucking insects are so tough up in the hills of Donegal. They don't feel.
Have you ever tried to kill a cockroach? They're hardy bastards.
No. I think I've only properly seen a couple of cockroaches in my life.
Really? When I was in Australia, we were up in Cairns, however they pronounce it. I can't remember now. I would say Cairns, but it's not that. And in the house, all us Irish, we came in one night and a cockroach was scurrying along the countertop. And I had practice of trying to kill these things, and it's like trying to stamp on a rock.
Yeah,
they're hard. So I trapped it under a pot.
Yeah,
and I was drunk, and I went into bed, and about seven o'clock in the morning, one of the girls from Northern Ireland, Fiona, was getting up to go to work.
What's that out there? What's making that noise?
And she obviously lifted up the pot in the kitchen and the cockroach just scurried out and I just heard. I woke up to a scream at 7 in the morning and my roommate was like, what the fuck was that? And I just started laughing because I knew that was me. I forgot to get rid of that cockroach and I couldn't say anything, but it was like, Jesus Christ. You can imagine like trying to make your boiled egg and a big fucking 3-inch cockroach just goes flying at you.
Stop.
The best bits. I'll use small words that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog faced buffoon.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
You are stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
Don't call me stupid.
Hello, and welcome to The Best Bits, a movie podcast where we pick our favorite scenes from randomly selected, weirdly specific themes. This is your co-host, Will, a writer of 3 films plus a Star Wars. And I'm joined by my co-host, writer of 1 and a bit films and 4 and a bit episodes of television, Kevin.
Witness me.
I'm witnessing you all the fucking time.
That's obviously from a very famous film.
Simpsons movie.
Yeah. That's how our brain works.
Kill scenes, Kevin. That's what we're doing today.
Not dead scenes.
We're not dead scenes.
Unnatural deaths.
Yeah. The only way I could find... the only way I could kind of approach this topic is by going at it from the old classic angle of breaking it up into various subcategories.
Well, hey. Categorization. Lists. Will loves his lists.
I do like categorization and lists.
And his Excel spreadsheets and his box office takings.
I do. I'm partial to a bit of an old spreadsheet. Excel is my friend.
Has anyone ever called you a nerd?
No, I have not. A jock. A fucking wanker.
Well, look, I apologize for that. And you know, let's leave the past in the past.
Kevin, there are all different types of kill scenes. There are revenge kills, sudden kills, brutal kills, stylized kills, comedic kills, creative, inventive kills, assassinations, which I'm not going to go into assassinations because we've kind of done a whole thing on assassinations.
We did.
There's
best monologues.
Mass kills, group kills, slower prolonged kills, heroic kills, accidental kills. There's so many different flavors, there's so many different types of kills.
Can I tell you what my categorizations were, which I'm not adhering to now, because when you told me what you were doing, I was like, oh, well, okay, I'll just dump them.
Yeah, okay.
But I was like, vanquishing villains.
Mm-hmm. Revenge.
Opening, yeah, okay. Slaying the dragon, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Mythologically.
I think that's like heroic kills. That's in my head would be same as heroic kills, yeah.
Self-sacrifice.
Yeah.
Opening kills. So I've made my list to adhere to yours, but can I tell you, right? The ones that I'm less excited by when it comes to kill scenes is the vanquishing villain ones. The ones where it's like the showdown and the guy gets killed because it's expected. And what really tickles my plums is the unexpected deaths. The ones okay. where it's like, whoa!
Yeah.
So opening kills and unexpected kills. And then, of course, the really shocking ones, the ones where it's like, holy shit, they really went there.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that get me. And then funny ones as well. But the ones where it's like, at the end, it's the showdown, Arnie against whoever. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's kind of obligatory.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be more shocking if he said, actually, just cuff him, take him away, rather than like throwing a pipe through his chest.
I agree with you.
Let off some steam.
John! I'm not going to shoot you between the eyes. I'm going to shoot you between the balls.
Let off some steam, Bennett.
I think there's one I have to get off my chest that we've discussed in the past, but I just want to highlight.
Alien.
There's definitely the kills in Alien.
Get off your chest.
Which one?
Alien?
No, chest buster.
No. The alien at the end when it's shot out the airlock.
Right.
Yeah, we've mentioned a load. Like when I was doing my list, it was like, oh, I've talked about that, I've talked about that, I've talked about that, I've talked yeah. about that, I've talked about that. Yeah. So I'm going to try and avoid those.
But I just need to bring, RoboCop up one last time, right?
Listen, it was going to be my pick,
yeah.
but we did a whole robot episode
yeah.
that was all about RoboCop. We did a RoboCop commentary and I believe Dan Martin picked it for special effects. It was his pick for best special effects.
It was, yeah. And go back to special effects scene because we covered it there. But there's one little bit of information that I discovered when I started doing research, which confirmed what happened to me when I was 9 or 10, when I rented that videotape, when I shouldn't have rented that videotape. And I was fully convinced that I watched the uncut version of that film of when I rented it. And people have said to me, no, you wouldn't have. The uncut version didn't come out until, you know, when the DVDs came out and stuff like that. But on my research, it turns out that on VHS, the uncut version was released in certain regions, including the UK and Ireland. And we got the uncut version. So the first version of RoboCop that I saw, which traumatized me as a kid with various kill scenes, which truly traumatized me in a massive way, was the uncut version. The Ed 209 kill of the executive in that office where he gets blasted to oblivion by Ed 209 and it goes on and on and on and on and on. I saw the uncut version of that when I was 9 or 10, which I shouldn't have. And the most traumatic is the execution of Alex Murphy, which Dan Martin brilliantly broke down in our best FX scene. That scene properly traumatized me as a kid.
You probably don't think I'm a very nice guy, do you?
Buddy, I think you're slime.
See, I got this problem. Cops don't like me, so I don't like cops.
If it wasn't for the fact that we've spoken about it, you know, so many times, it would be probably top of my heap.
It's weird. It didn't ever affect me like that. I just thought it was cool.
But did you watch the... You probably saw the cut version of it. You see, that's the thing. The cut version.
No,
of
I would have seen it on video as well, but I don't know.
But I don't know if you saw the really prolonged...
There's only a few frames in it, though. It's like when the guy's getting gunned down, it goes from maybe 15 seconds of being like blasted to 30 seconds.
And then the Alex Murphy death? Is that... I wonder how what the difference between the theatrical...
I mean, it's pretty fucking... It's pretty full on as it is.
Ammo. Hey, Clarence, you still alive?
Does it hurt? Does it hurt?
Okay, Funzo. Okay, let's get out of here.
So that was a traumatizing kill scene for me. There have been many of those. They're my least favorite because I hate being traumatized. I fucking hate it.
Well, we have two ways we could go on to start off this topic. One is I can get rid of my traumatizing kill scenes. I don't know if you want me to do that. Or we could start with opening kills.
I don't mind.
Or we could pay tribute to the man who is the king of death scenes.
Okay.
Mr. Sean Bean, your pal.
Oh, Shawnee.
Yeah.
Or I call him Beanie.
Oh, Sean.
Beanster.
A while back, one of our patrons, Patrick, suggested a scene topic for us. And we already had death scenes and kill scenes in there, but it was best Sean Bean death scene.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you then, seeing as I've now brought it up, what's your favorite Sean Bean death scene?
Oh, shit. You're putting me on the spot. Well, the only two I can think of is the season ender of season one of Game of Thrones. I can't think of any other.
That was pretty great.
Yeah.
What about Lord of the Rings?
Oh, shit. So is that your pick?
No. Mine is when he gets killed by cows at the end of the field.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that was another good one.
Yeah.
I was trying to think
he's had loads. He's been killed like about 60 times in different films and TV shows.
How did he die in GoldenEye? That's what I was. I have a vision of him.
Crushed by an antenna.
Was it the antenna? I have a vision of the antenna.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, very good. Oh, poor old Sean. Mentioned you had opening kill scenes and I hadn't thought about it from an opening kill scene point of view. Where were you going to go with that?
See, those are great. Well, I'll quickly, my death scene doesn't come from an opening, my favorite one that I'm going to mention,
yeah,
or my kill scene, I should say. But of course, I have to mention the obvious ones. Jaws.
Yeah.
Ding. We all love that one. Scream. Ding.
Scream.
I love that one. Yes. Listen, I didn't mock you on fucking...
You're the one who brought it up.
Shut up. I did to help you out.
This is, as we said, this is all a part of the lore. These are all in-jokes that go way back to season one. So continue.
They are.
Continue.
Cliffhanger.
Oh, yeah. Is that a kill scene? Very is good. That's more of an accidental death scene.
Yeah, he throws her off the rope. Because she was the third wheel. She was getting in between him and his relationship with his buddy.
Yeah.
I'm like, get rid of her. She's dead weight.
Please, I don't want to die.
You're not going to die.
Don't let me.
Sarah, I got you. Just reach up.
I can't.
You can do it. Please, baby, just reach up. Sarah, please.
No, it's living. Game, don't let me fall. No.
No.
Oh, they're falling. Game.
Kill scene for me is somebody gets killed.
Yeah, a lot of Bond.
So that's an unnatural death.
Bond has a lot of opening kill scenes.
Like he does.
Casino,
Last Boy Scout.
Casino Royale. That one where it's his first, like, you know, that opening pre-credit scene is his first.
Where he gets
kill.
His 00.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a brutal one.
Made you feel it, did he? Well, you needn't worry. The second is... Yes. Considerably.
Lots of horror movies begin with an opening kill.
Mm.
And I just wanted to mention some standard ones there. Kill scenes are a great opening because... One, they can establish what the thread of the story is. So you're laying down the gauntlet. The inciting incident is sort of established with that moment.
Yeah.
They're also a neat way to open a story because you're beginning at the end of somebody's life. Yeah. So it's a very satisfying way to open a script. So there's tons of great opening kills in movies. But yeah, I thought I would just mention those. You don't have any that come to mind?
Opening kills, I can't off the top of my head kind of go, oh, that's, you've named a couple of them right there. I was just thinking of the Bond one. That's the one that popped into my head as an opening kill.
Well, then I may as well tell you then the ones that really disturbed me.
Okay, yeah.
Because you said that traumatized you. Yeah. The ones that traumatized me, they came much later.
Really?
So it was when I saw the death in Platoon of that kid.
Oh, shit. That's exactly the one I was going to bring up next. Oh, my God. Yeah.
There you go. It's like we should do a podcast.
We should do a podcast. It's the dance scene, the one where
he dances on his head.
Yeah, yeah.
Do people in Donegal say that? Because in Cork, that's like a way that you'd tell a kid a parent would tell a kid they're going to kill him. When I get home, I'll dance on you.
I just remember I being told, I'll leather you. Were you ever told you were going to be leathered?
I'll reef the head off you when I get a hold of you.
Did I ever tell you the time I was at a Q&A? I don't think I did. I was at a Q&A.
We've told each other almost everything.
This one I don't think I have told you. I was at a Q&A at the Galway Film Fla where Matt Dillon was there.
And you shit yourself.
Sorry, what?
And you shit yourself.
I didn't shit myself. No, I didn't.
Oh,
no.
Sorry. I'm just getting mixed up with so many other stories you've told me.
He was talking about his career, like, going back to working with Francis Ford Coppola and all the amazing films he's been in and all that sort of stuff. And I was in my head going, why isn't he talking about like the time he worked with Oliver Stone, you know? And then when it came to Q&A or like asking for questions, and I was going, shit, I got to bring up the Oliver Stone thing, like, you know, and I even put my hand up like to get the mic. And just as someone got in ahead of me, so I didn't get to ask my question, and I was so fucking glad. Because Matt Dillon wasn't in Platoon.
That's Kevin Dillon.
Kevin Dillon, his brother. Yeah, I was going to ask him, what was it like working in Platoon? It was the wrong Dillon. It was the wrong Dillon. I was this close to being embarrassed in front of Matt Dillon and a crowd of film nerds at the Galway Film Fla one time.
That reminds me of the time when I said to Samuel L. Jackson that I loved him in The Matrix. That's a joke from Extras. I didn't say that. I was Ricky Gervais. Ding.
The dance scene in Platoon really, really disturbed me. I actually had to, anytime I watched Platoon, I would kind of have to look away.
It was the first time where I felt a new emotion as a kid. I'd never felt a particular emotion before, which was despair.
Yeah.
Because I'd watched all these different monster movies and all these different, like, you know, action films. Because when we were a kid, fucking hell, nearly every film involved somebody getting blown away and killed. Even like Raiders of the Lost Ark, you're watching people melt or getting, you know, exploded or killed by spiders and things. But that was like, horrible. And then the other one, which still to this day, if we're talking about kill scenes, the one where I'm like, anything but that, anything, like there's a way to do a kill scene where it's satisfying, it's entertaining, it's cathartic, it's unexpected, it's deserved, it's funny, it's whatever. But there's one that made me feel like I felt dirty. It did its job. It was exactly what it set out to do. But it was the murder scene in Snowtown. And it's when the guys take this oblivious victim into the bathtub and they kill him. And it's so drawn out. And there's a teenage character in it who is witnessing this, and he's standing in the doorway and he's sort of like stunned at what's going on as they're slowly killing this guy and he's coming back around and it was horrible. And the fact that it's so unshowy and it's just sort of, it's presented and it's so realistic and unvarnished and there's nothing at all about it that's like movie-esque. I felt complicit. I felt like I'd witnessed an actual murder and I felt grim.
Oh,
incredible film. If that's what you're setting out to do, which is like you're presenting, murder is a lot more difficult to pull off. It's like if movies, they'll shoot a guy once, bang, they've dropped down dead. But obviously you shoot somebody and they're rolling around for 20 minutes in agony, but they don't do that. Whereas Snowtown really just says, you know, it's easy to just imagine a death being quick and over with, but it takes a lot of effort to kill somebody. And because it was based on a true story, they present it to you and go like, look, this is what happened and this is what it involves. And yeah, It totally put me off ever wanting to kill anyone.
Jesus.
No, I'm glad. Very, very briefly, and not to bring us down, going back to the kill scene in Platoon where they make the kid dance and Kevin Dillon brutally murders him. I read a book recently, which was brilliant. It was about the Vietnam War by Tim O'Brien. It's a book that's been out decades. It's called The Things They Carried. And there's a scene in that, you know, where he's writing about his own experiences during the Vietnam War. And there's a scene in that book which echoed that scene in Platoon for me, where they execute a cow after their friends have been killed tragically. And you can see where that scene from Platoon came from, because they themselves are kids. They're traumatized and they're finding it's a type of revenge, but it's this brutal act of violence that's almost like, it's not even cathartic, it's just a reaction, and it's brutal and it's horrible, and it was hard to watch as a kid, it's hard to watch now as an adult, but it's probably true to life of what goes on during those war scenes. So it's not fun, it's not enjoyable, it's not titillating, but it's probably tragically a brutal reality. And it's a brave scene to put on film, and I think it works, still works to this day, because it makes you feel kind of sick and complicit. Those type of scenes are important to have on screen as well.
You smoke this shit so to escape from reality? I am reality. There's the way it ought to be, and there's the way it is. Well, you all know about death.
It can be fun as well, though. So I've got some funny death scenes. Do you have any of those?
I've got funny death scenes. I do have one funny death scene.
Let's talk about that then.
Yeah. Let's talk about the one funny death scene. The funniest death scene, and I think, and I'm not sure, but I think we brought it up, was the death scene from Karate Girl, that Turkish film from 1973.
That's a really bad one. When did that come up? What was that in?
We definitely brought it up in one of our episodes before. I think it's worth bringing up again because it is so funny. It is so bad. It's so funny. It's a Karate Girl. It's a Turkish film from 1973 where Karate Girl comes into the room and she shoots a villain 4 times and he dies in slow motion. But instead of shooting in slow motion, he performs it in slow motion, and it's just hilarious. It's one of the funniest fucking things. He even, the first time he gets shot, he clenches his fist to his stomach and you can see him squeezing the blood bag.
Yeah.
And it's just really, really funny. He's become one of those internet viral sensations. That's a very, very funny one.
I'm going to mention a few then. The death in Austin Powers when they're rolling along on the steamroller and they're like, watch out!
No! Oh, let's go! Come on, let's go!
They roll over him.
Yeah.
And then they do the whole protracted thing of what you never see is what happens to the family members of the henchmen who get killed. Where they get the phone call and it's like, daddy's dead.
That is great.
That's great. Gremlins, the gremlin in the microwave. That's a very funny death scene. Burn After Reading, when Brad Pitt is hiding in the closet and he shoots him straight in the head. That was shocking as well as funny. Hot Shots Part 2, when they do the whole mass death where he racks up the highest body count ever in an action film. He's just gunning down people and it ends with him shooting the chicken.
Thank you, Topper. I can kill again. You've given me a reason to live.
Good.
Someone on the Discord shared a gif from that where he guns down a bunch of guys who've got like targets on their chest. He runs out of bullets and he just turns around. There's a bunch of guys come up behind him. He just reaches his fist into a box of ammo and just throws it at them and they all die. And I just went like,
love those films. So funny.
Yeah.
Yes!
And then there's one that people like, and I think it's just bad. I think it's a bad death scene. But I remember seeing it in the cinema when I was 19 or 20, whenever that film came out, and we snuck in like a little nagging each. And we were all like,
ooh,
pished watching the film.
Naughty.
Samuel L. Jackson's death in Deep Blue Sea when he gets eaten by the CG shark.
We're going to pull together and we're going to find a way to get out of here. First, we're going to seal off this movie.
I got a proper shock with that one. I went, what the fuck?
Did you? I just thought it was so dumb. I don't like that film anyway. I know people that do kind of like it in an offbeat way, but for me, it blew the promise of what I wanted from that film based on, I remember seeing publicity stills for that and thinking, oh my God, it's going to be like a new version of Jaws. It looks class. These big animatronic sharks. And then there was so much CG in it that's unscary. It never works for me.
CG ruins, and I think this is a good little segue for me, because I do enjoy creative and inventive kill scenes, right? And we have to nod to an entire franchise which is built around the inventive kill scene, which is Final Destination. We've definitely mentioned Final Destination in the past. We talked about the log scene from Final Destination 2. But there are so many others. I kind of enjoyed the first couple when I watched them in the cinema. But from about 4 or 5, that's when they started relying heavily on CG. And it just kind of kills those scenes.
Yeah, my favorite is Part 2. Although the very final Destination film did a very clever thing where you didn't realize until the very end that you were watching a prequel. And that the whole thing looped back around to the first film. So it ended with the survivors of the final destination getting onto the plane that blew up at the beginning of the first film.
Yeah.
But I love Part 2. I remember Eric Heiser, I think that's how you say his name, the screenwriter who wrote, maybe it was the fourth one. He wrote one of them. I can't remember though. But he got the job by pitching 2 words, LASIK surgery. And they're like, okay, we're in. That's it. I've said this before on Mike, but another series which I think is like the progenitor to Final Destination is the Omen series, because those films, you never see death.
Yeah.
Like death, the specter. It's people either kill themselves or something happens to them.
Yeah.
But it's the specter of Satan and his minions that are making these things happen. And the Final Destination films, they have a similar thing where some crazy accident will happen.
Yeah.
A truck will, its brakes will disengage and it will slide backwards and a plate of glass will slide out and take off David Warner's head. But there's a doctor in the second film who is analyzing the blood sample of Damien, and he realizes that it's not human cells, it's like jackal cells, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But he gets into an elevator and the elevator is descending, and the thing happens where Satan's not going to allow the truth to come out.
Yeah.
And so stuff goes wrong and the cable snaps. The elevator drops, falls, and he is lying on the floor like, going, what the hell? And then the cable just descends rapidly right down the elevator shaft, cuts straight through the elevator and cuts him in half. And it was like, oh, that's like a death from Final Destination.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's reminding me of the first one in you know, when, who was it? The photographer who gets his head decapitated with that sheet of glass.
Yeah, David Warner.
It was a David Warner, yeah. And going back to Final Destination, I went and watched a selection of the deaths from that, just to get of the kills from that, where, you know, there's a delight and a slow build of anxiety, and they play out red. The best ones kind of deliver some red herrings and kind of like, you know, misdirect you.
Like in that first one, when she's walking around the apartment and there's the boiling pot of water, there's the steak knife that's dangling, there's, you know, the fire escape thing that's clattering, and you're thinking, where's it going to come from? Death's going to get her. Where's it going to come from? But the first one as well had that horrible death of the guy getting strangled in the shower.
Yeah. And they're wondering, oh, was it a suicide and all that sort of stuff? Yeah, that was, you know.
The sunbed's death. What one was that in?
That was 3. It was sunbeds. Yeah, I watched that one. That was one of the ones I actually watched, where the two girls get fried alive in the sunbed. And it's
and it has that lovely match cut then to the adjoining coffins.
Yeah.
Either side.
So there's a play. When it's been playful and funny, it's actually, you know, they're quite palatable, you know, to watch. There was one that I wanted to bring up because it was a sidebar that I did mention on the Discord. In the first Final Destination, I think there's a death, and Terry is the name of the character. And basically, what ends up happening is, like, you have a couple out discussing the death of the guy in the shower, and you see cars going by, and you're kind of wondering, is a brake going to go in a car? Is it going to slam into, you know, the coffee shop, and someone, you know, fall? Is Sean William Scott, like, is cycling in his bike, and you kind of, is it going to happen? Is he going to get killed or whatnot? You know, there's that slow kind of build of tension, and the scene kind of releases as the characters have this, like, this dramatic standoff outside the coffee shop, and you kind of feel that the tension from that kill has been released when the character Terry does the thing that a lot of films started to do back in that days, where she steps out onto the road and all of a sudden a bus hits her and it comes out of frame.
Then you can just drop fucking dead.
It's so overdone, that death note, but they didn't do that first.
They didn't do it first.
It was Bride of Chucky did it first.
That works too.
Get this heap of shit moving now.
Okay, The Bride of Chucky, and we discuss Meet Joe Black, because remember that one where Brad Pitt gets
that
killed
was
in
ridiculous.
Meet Joe
yeah,
Black.
That's come up.
He gets hit a couple of times. But something popped up on social media, and someone pointed out how there's a scene in the really bad film Space Jam 2 where it's kind of like the final scene where LeBron James is kind of sending his kid off to school or something like that. And it's the scene is happening on a sidewalk. He's saying goodbye to his kid. The kid is saying, all right, dad, goodbye. But it's framed and blocked in exactly the same way those scenes do, where the camera is kind of perpendicular to the road. And the kid is walking across the road, maintaining eye contact with LeBron, walking away. And you just are waiting for a truck to come along and slam into this kid. So there's a sense of building tension, because we've seen all these other films that where that's happened, and it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. You just feel this, like, oh, this kid's going to be killed. Oh, God. Oh, God. And it's totally unintentional, but it's funny.
Whenever I see people sitting in a car driving and the camera is locked off and shooting them in profile.
Yeah.
And they're like coming into an intersection, almost without fail, they're going to drive into getting hit side on by something.
Yeah.
They love doing that shot. If you can think of, like, in No Country for Old Men, which has got a great death scene that happens off camera, or a kill scene. But when Javier Bardem is driving away and suddenly he gets slammed from the side, how many times have you seen that particular shot? It's almost done as much as someone stepping into the road and something slamming them from off camera.
Yeah. And it's something inventive and fresh. It's amazing the first time you see it. Inevitably, it gets copied and copied and copied and copied to the point where it becomes a trope and it becomes codified, and people's expectations, we just become used to the gag at that stage.
Yeah.
You kind of have to abandon it.
Play off that, then you can have fun with it. You know,
yeah.
Where, like, John Carpenter would position the camera in a certain way where there's much more negative space behind the character, and he'd leave like an open doorway, because that creates tension, because, you know, they're sitting with their back to an open door, their back to an open window, or their back to darkness. And you think something is going to come out from behind them. So you can never fully relax, and maybe something does or maybe something doesn't, but it's knowing what the audience anticipates or expects or feels and playing off that. Wes Craven used to do it as well, where it's like you lead the audience to think this is going to happen, it doesn't happen, and then you surprise them by having it happen a beat later from a different point of danger.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you brought up a film that we've mentioned before, but it's got amazing kill scenes, No Country for Old Men, when he's using that the cattle killer thing, that device.
It's a tickle stick.
Come up here, little cow, I'm going to tickle your forehead.
The air gun that blows a hole in their head,
the air thing, yeah, the thing that goes through their forehead. Yeah.
Do you know, I actually went to an abattoir as a kid, and
for fun?
I
did a school trip.
I'm sure I've told you this.
School trip, was it?
No, my Uncle Tony took me down. I think he was buying meat off of the direct from the source.
Hey, Tony.
He was like going there.
Going straight to the butcher's.
come on, little Kev. We're going to go to the
this
abattoir.
Is a very traumatic story.
It's going to be a bonding day. Me and little Kev.
He was Irish. He's from Cork.
No. Once you say Tony, in my head, you grew up in the Bronx, right? Go on.
I thought you were doing a London accent.
No, you're in the Bronx. Come on, Kev. We're going to go to the abattoir. It's going to be fun.
Aren't you fucking Tony? Tony. Will Tony two times? What are you talking about?
Johnny,
you're going geriatric on me. Anyway, my uncle Tony took me to a slaughterhouse, and I think he was meeting a mate there. There was something that was going on. It was like, you know, it was grown up stuff. It was like, I'll get in there, I'll just be a few minutes.
Of course, it's grown up stuff. They're in an abattoir. They're not playing conkers in an abattoir.
But you know, when you're a kid, you're like being taken somewhere. It's like you hopped in the car and you don't know where they're going or what they're up to. And they're going in there and they're coming back out with an envelope that's full of money. And anyway, I went in to this slaughterhouse where the cows are being led in.
Yeah.
And you know, they're trapped between the bars.
Yeah.
And it's one after the other. And it was slanted. It was an inverted tiled floor that went to a trough, like a urinal almost.
Oh, God.
And I had on white plimsolls. I was about eight, in my shorts. And I remember it for a couple of reasons. But one was the cow would be stuck. The guy would take that gun that the fella had and it'd go, ka-chunk, fuh. And then the cow would just start flopping and flailing about and spasming. And there would be all this blood that would be pouring down. And my Uncle Tony picked me up and was holding me up so that the blood wouldn't get on my white plimsolls. And yeah, I just remember thinking, this is horrendous. Yeah.
I'm shocked for 8-year-old Kevin here. I'm actually going, holy shit.
Does this stop filling the blanks for you where it's like, that explains that.
Okay. No. And when we file the police report, I'll just remember to include that detail.
I don't like that. I told you, I don't like that shit.
I'm joking.
I like stylized dead. I used to find guys in school that would like pull the legs off of Daddy Longlegs's. Like fucking psychopaths. Like
because
absolutely horrible.
Because they're psychopaths. If you have a kid who's doing that shit, you need to get them into therapy straight away. If you can't afford
Or trapping and killing pigeons.
Why the fuck like, would anyone do that?
In Cork, like a deprived city at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I remember hearing one of the kids who was a year ahead of me in school talking about like how I skinned a toad. Skinned a toad. And I was like, I remember being a kid and going, why
we have to get back we have to move on to a different topic because this will start making me really ill.
Hey,
here's a funny one for you. I've got one that'll make you laugh.
Please.
The child that gets his head cut off in Hereditary. That was hilarious.
I laughed and laughed and laughed.
Ka-thunk. Like, what the fuck? I saw that in the cinema, right?
Yeah.
And I just remember the inhale that went right across the whole cinema. It was the opposite of a scream.
Yeah.
It was like something I'd never heard before. It was just instant, like,
oh God.
And then complete silence.
Yeah.
It was like, what have I just seen? Are they allowed to do that? You can't do that.
Yeah.
And I was kicking my heels up and I was giggling.
See, all you could do, like, you see, that's the reaction.
I stood up and I pointed and I go, now that's what I'm talking about.
This
play
is
it again.
Comedy.
Play it again.
Who says comedy's a dying genre? That's it, baby.
Yep.
In that scene, it's the reaction of her brother, which is kind of perfect. He knows what's happened. He cannot bear to look around. He just
leaves the head there. And then the cut to the head with all the flies on it.
Oh.
But that's why it's called Her Head Hit a Tree.
Her Head Hit a Tree.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Another funny one. I've got another funny one.
Yeah.
And one I definitely was going to bring up. But it's darkly comic and it's quite sudden. It's that one the Joker does to the gangster with the hidden pencil.
The pencil.
The disappearing
Everybody
pencil
laughed
trend.
In the cinema at that. Everybody went like, and then guffawed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Give me one reason why I shouldn't have my boy here pull your head off.
How about a magic trick?
I'm gonna make this pencil disappear.
Ta-da!
It's gone.
It was very good.
It is.
That's the most menacing he's ever been.
Yeah.
Aside from when he's singing with Lady Gaga, that was also terrifying.
I haven't seen it yet, but I will watch it. But that scene, what a brilliant character moment, you know, to walk into this room full of gangsters, the head mobsters of Gotham City, and they don't know who he is, but just there's an aura of mystery around him. And he comes in and does this parlor trick, and it's so simple and effective that it gets everyone off balance. And, what you know, from the little bit of research I did around that, you know, Heath Ledger played all his scenes that way, where he was constantly darting this way, you know, with the other actors. They never really knew how
keeping
he was
them on
going
their toes.
Yeah, he was constantly keeping them on their toes. Very much like the character of Joker himself, who seems like he's completely chaotic, but in actual fact, he's incredibly calculating. He's incredibly inventive.
He's just deranged.
There's method. There's an incredible method and kind of craftsmanship around what he's doing.
Well, that's like so impressive, because how did he manage to get it to go straight up his nostril?
That's
a small little hole.
It's a small little hole. Yeah. And that was done. That wasn't a visual trick. That wasn't like, you know, a digital
They actually
deletion.
Killed him.
They actually killed him. Yeah, they killed him.
I'm going to tell you some other ones for myself that I found very hard to watch.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've seen this film.
Tell me.
But in Bone Tomahawk.
No, I know this one. I was tempted to watch it.
Well, what we'll do,
probably
we'll watch
will.
It right now.
Okay, let's do it. Right.
Go on YouTube.
Yeah.
And hit play. I don't even think that would be allowed on YouTube, to be honest with you.
Do you want me to watch it? Do you want me to do it just for the purposes of actually having this and you can do a hard cut?
Go on then, if you want to. If you want to.
Okay. What is it? And you can do it. What's it called?
Bone Tomahawk death scene.
Oh, shit. Okay. Tomahawk scene. And I'm just, the first thing is, hold on, it's just like Bone Tomahawk scene. I think it's, is it the one Butchery number 3, perchance?
Yes, that would be it. Anything that's got butchery in it.
3 minutes. 3 minutes. So they're in a cage.
Are you actually watching it right now?
Yeah, I'm actually watching it right now. So there's Kurt Russell.
I'll tell you this. I would not even rewatch that.
There's a big, really menacing. Oh, he just let out a scream which sounded very animalistic. Mm-hmm. There's a guy with glasses in the cage with him.
Richard Jenkins.
Was it Richard Jenkins? They have good casts in this.
Yeah, he's got a lovely line at the end. Say hello to my wife. I'll say goodbye to yours.
They're dragging someone out of Kurt Russell's in this.
He is, yeah.
Nick. Telling Nick to wake up, right? They're dragging Nick out. God damn it, Nick, wake up! Kurt Russell's. Oh, I can see his naked ass.
You're going to see a lot more of it.
Kurt Russell's trying to break through the bars.
This is great podcasting.
Oh no.
Just think of the aroma.
Okay, that's not good. He's been injured. Nick is. Oh no. Nick's awake.
He's not going to be awake for much longer.
Oh god, I'm listening to Nick and he's talking to Kurt Russell and I'm a oh god, oh what are they doing? Oh stop, oh stop, oh Jesus, oh god, oh stop, oh no, oh no. Oh, this is awful. Oh my god, stop.
I'm gonna die. Oh god.
Oh no.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my.
This isn't fun.
Oh Jesus.
That's awful. Open your eyes. Look at it.
Oh my God, that's awful.
Is that your pick?
That's one of the most horrific things I've ever seen. That's awful. Oh God. Truly awful.
God, that's killed me.
Oh God. You see, now I want to put you in my shoes, right?
Hang on a second. My whole body aches after that.
If I was in a cinema, that's the reason I if I was watching that in a cinema, I would feel completely trapped. I would feel like I was going through it with that person. Here, you saw me, you were watching me. I found it really difficult to watch that. Really fucking difficult. That's awful. That's awful.
So that's one of my picks.
Oh, shit. I feel like I need a cigarette. I need I need a coffee or I need something to, I don't know what. I need something to help me come down off that one.
Jesus Christ. We talked about RoboCop and Resurrections, like it's death before resurrection. I've got one I want to mention that is...
I don't think I can finish this episode. I don't think I'm done. I'm out.
One of my favorite death scenes, one that it really like gets me excited. I'm like leaning forward and going like, yes, fucking yes, do it. The Passion of the Christ.
Shall we watch that one and get a reaction?
No, Lois is dead in Superman.
Segue. It's been a while.
Gotta play the hits. I'll tell you one which is very disappointing to me, and I think it's done for laughs.
What?
And it's kind of similar to, you know, in Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, the official title to the first film.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he shoots the guy.
Yeah.
That's a brilliant death scene.
It is. Yeah.
But then there's the one that kind of does similar, but it's actually kind of unsatisfying. And it's the end of Big Trouble in Little China, when Kurt Russell takes the knife and he just throws it and it goes straight into Lo Pan's head. And he's dead. That's it. Done.
Ah, that's, yeah, okay. You see, it doesn't even register in my memory. It's so anticlimactic.
There are loads of other great deaths in that, you know, like the guy where he fills up with air and he explodes.
Yeah, that's hilarious. That actually, that would have been a hilarious death scene. That really would have been.
He's gonna stop. Come on.
They did it as well in the Naked Gun. I can't remember which one. Was it the second one? Where the guy, I think he jams a hose in him and he swells all the way up until he explodes.
Yeah.
And he explodes off camera. I find those kind of things hilarious.
Norbert's dead scene, but he doesn't actually die in it like in the first Naked Gun. Like, he's been through so much, and I know OJ Simpson.
He's dragged along and he's blown up.
He's knocked over the stadium, and you know, he's flat on the ground, and like a marching band comes over him and all that sort of stuff and tramples on the body. And yeah, that's funny.
I've got some more really fun ones.
Please, I'm still traumatized. Yes, please take. Give me a ban.
You know how to overcome that feeling you've got right now is to become desensitized to it. So you should watch it again.
I'll watch it again. Maybe I will. Yeah. Let's
hit play.
All these things.
The Debt in Jurassic Park. I love that one.
Which one? Are you
the goat?
Oh, the goat. Are you talking about the death of the goat? Or was I thinking about the guy in the toilet? That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, that's good. And then there's the shocking ones. The ones which is like, I didn't expect that. And they're kind of
sudden
fun.
Ones.
Sudden
yeah,
ones,
okay.
Yeah. Executive Decision. When Steven Seagal, he gets blown out the airlock.
This is my favourite part of that film.
Me too.
He's not in this film. He's gone. Great. This is a Kurt Russell film. Fantastic.
We're not going to make it.
I remember my cousin Greg was like pissed off at the film because he thought he was going to get a Steven Seagal action film because his name was above the title. And then he gets blown out of the airlock, but 15 minutes in. I was like, yeah,
I got
good.
One.
Get rid of him.
I got one for this category, and it's a film that I only saw like maybe last year. And I thought it was really good. the one in The Invisible Man where they're at the restaurant. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, that was great.
She's making her case to, I don't know, her sister or sister-in-law, I can't remember. And all of a sudden...
What is that? It's some kind of suit that Adrian has built. And it has cameras and it somehow... What?
The sharp knife is taken out of her hand and it slits the woman across the table from her throat and goes straight back into her hand. And she's like, what the fuck? And everyone sees it.
Yeah, she's done. Great.
It's so abrupt. It's so sudden. And it's so quick. It's like, and everything.
And you didn't expect it. So you're in the same shoes as her, which is like, you think you're safe because you're in a crowded restaurant and bang, killed. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Can I talk about some heroic deaths?
Please. Yeah.
Self-sacrifice ones.
Go on.
There are two which are very similar. And one was worried about the other when they found out that they were both ending in a similar way. And they're both from 1992. Can you guess the films?
Alien 3 and Terminator 2.
Very good. Oh, I forgot you can see my notes.
No, I can't see your notes. I actually knew it. As soon as you said 1992, I just went, yeah, they both, because that in my head, they had such similar endings.
Yeah, because they both go into the furnace.
Yeah.
I don't love the effect of Alien 3, you know, that CG fire, it doesn't look that good. And I know that they were down to the last few days of post-production on that film, so they couldn't really do any better than that. But I think that's a fantastic ending for that character. It's such a heroic, no perfect way to go out. It's bleak, but it suits the franchise. And what I didn't realise until the Blu-rays came out, the quadrilogy, was that there was two versions of that ending. One which was she just fell into the flames, which I think was the theatrical cut. And then the VHS and sort of the director's cuts was the alien queen bursting out of her chest and her holding onto it and falling into the fire, holding onto it.
I didn't realise that was added in like post-theatrical.
I believe so, yeah. There was two versions. Wow. I've only ever seen it with the...
With
holding onto the puppet.
Yeah. Mm. Oh wow, I didn't realise. I'm going to go back and see if I can see the more low key version of it, because I remember the music swelling. It's got such a great score.
Yeah, Elliot Goldenthal, amazing music.
Really lovely, really lovely.
Operatic,
but also heroic. It captures a kind of tragedy. Yeah, it's really great.
And then the T2 one choked me up, you know, where he's giving the thumbs up. And to think that, like, this is the genius of Cameron. To take one of the most formidable and frightening villains of the first film and to take him to a point where it's like the death of a fucking dog. Where it's like, oh my God, that's so tragic. His dad is killing himself, the robot dad. Brilliant ending, so satisfying. One of the greatest action films of all time.
Yeah.
And yeah. And absolutely. The last one, I'll mention heroic deaths because we've talked about this as well before, and it was my pick on best car scene. It's the end of Thelma and Louise. Oh, they drive off the cliff.
Okay, then listen. Let's not get caught. What are you talking about? Let's keep going. What do you mean? Go! You sure? Yeah.
Yeah, you see, I suppose we call it a kill. Yeah, but it's, you know, kill scene.
They kill themselves.
They do kill themselves, yeah. That is true. That is true. It's a brilliant ending. It's a beautiful scene. I remember going back over it when we were talking about that episode, and it was just so emotional, even just watching that scene again.
You edited that episode, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I love. And I love it when you get a scene that you love, and it's just, it's always a beautiful scene. Absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it. I've got one little group that I want to bring up. There's one scene I want to bring up. It's kind of satisfying, actually. And it's a mass killing. It's a mass killing scene.
you know, the likes of which you might see in Inglourious Basterds, for instance. We brought that film up an awful lot. The big execution of Adolf Hitler and all his cronies in the cinema.
Oh yeah, great.
It's kind of satisfying. But the one I wanted to bring up is from one of the most famous films of all time. But it's a masking scene, which is kind of really satisfying and beautiful and tragic at the same time. It's from The Godfather, and it's the baptism mass execution where Michael takes out all of his enemies, intercut with his son Michael Jr. being baptized, where we get to see the killing in the elevator. We get to see the execution of the Hollywood producer as he's getting his back massage.
A smorgasbord of death.
Yeah, but it's kind of got a Rube Goldberg kind of satisfying quality to it, where we see the planning, the plotting, the preparation, and the execution. And so seeing them all kind of working in concert.
It's a juxtaposition of
this juxtaposition.
Birth and death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you renounce Satan?
And it's cutting away to Michael's face where, you know, he's emotionless and, you know, he's gone to the dark side. But I think all of them are really kind of nicely detailed, and I kind of find it's delightful in its own little way.
Michael Ritchie, will you be baptized?
What about sad kill scenes?
Sad kill scenes. Is there anyone that comes to mind?
Saving Private Ryan.
Oh.
There's a couple in Saving Private Ryan where you just feel the futility, the tragedy, and the loss of a light going out in these lovely characters. Where it's like, oh, yeah. God, don't. But yeah, they always make me choke up. It's like, so like, this is awful.
Like tragic kind of kill scenes, like, oh, actually, like in, oh, like in The Green Mile, for God's sake. Jesus Christ. Yeah, the execution of John Coffey in that one. Like, that's totally tragic and totally sad, you know?
The only thing about The Green Mile is I found it so saccharine.
It is quite.
Where I feel the heavy hand of the director, where it's so manipulative. It doesn't work for me. It's almost the more understated they go, the more I feel it.
Yeah, that's I agree with you. Yeah, if you egg it too much, it doesn't quite work. And I do think The Green Mile did erred on the side of being a bit too saccharine.
Yeah, it was like overall lights flashing and sparks and people just looking on like, what is it they say is, or maybe it's, I've said this, I don't know. But what I find personally more effective in making me cry is somebody else trying hard not to cry. Mm-hmm. When somebody is holding back.
Yeah.
Whereas when they're openly weeping or sobbing, I just feel a bit more cold and distant to it. Mm-hmm. It's like when I'm at funerals and everyone's crying, I'm just going like, oh, get
over it. Get over it. Because one funny one that's that reminded me of that, where I was really glad, couldn't wait for it to be over, was the killing of Marley and Me.
You couldn't wait for that. I've never seen it, so I don't know. How does he die? Does Jennifer Aniston kill him? Run him over with a car?
We're talking about mawkish and saccharine and over-egged and over and too many tears being spilled and the music swelling too much.
All I get from that is the executives all around the conference table going, we gotta push it.
This is where everyone's fucking got to be crying. I want the veterinarian to be crying.
And the authors there going like, I want people to be dying. I want them to take it out in stretchers.
Yeah.
Dehydrated.
That was, honest to God, I was like, at that point in the story, I was just like, just kill him. Just take out a gun and just shoot the dog because I'm done with the scene. I just wanted a vet to come in and just execute the bloody dog at that particular point in the story.
You're reminding me of when we put down the dog. It's really fucking, don't know why you had to bring that up. It's just totally like, you brought me right back in. I was carrying her into the vets and the two girls working behind her, it's like a hairdresser's, I'm like, who's this? This is little, and I goes, it's Rosie, and I burst into tears. I burst into fucking tears, holding her, and I remember this girl. It must have been about 2021. She went, oh,
stop! We can't do this.
And I was so, I was, because I'd been up all night. I was so fucking.
Oh no!
I was so overwrought. No. I was wearing my t-shirt inside out and backwards.
Oh my god!
And I was holding her. And yeah. And
I,
he
can't,
said,
I can't be with you.
Do you want to
I
be here? Do you want to be here? And I goes, no, I can't. And I just, I bent down and I kissed her. And
oh,
I said,
no, Kevin.
I said, thank you, Rosie. Thank
you. Stop.
Because she'd been by my side for 12 years. And when I was very down, she would follow me around. She would stay by my side.
And what did you do?
Oh, God.
What did you do to her?
Oh, God.
You took her to her executor. You took her to her executor.
They said, you know, at that stage, her quality of life is gone now. And it just felt cruel. And so the kindest thing to do was to let her rest. And she slept at the foot of my bed every day for 12 years. Oh, God. I don't know why you had to bring up fucking Marley and Me.
Because we started a trend of going through your past traumas for the entertainment of the masses. And I think we just went down that road, Kevin.
Can I tell you the very first death scene I remember in a movie where I thought, this is thrilling?
Go on.
It's not Halloween.
Okay.
It's not that. Those were scary. It was in Jaws 2. It was Marge was eaten in Jaws 2. It's such a spectacular stunt as well. It's where Marge, she's the girl, and I don't know. I used to love babysitters as a kid. Oh my God, she's gorgeous. And so Marge is babysitting Roy Scheider's son, the little boy.
Yeah.
And they're all on different boats that have been all tipped over, and she's with him. And the shark comes along and he does some sort of fucking business where he knocks them all over. And Sean falls into the water. The little boy's about 8.
Yeah.
And the shark is like coming from all different places. I don't know where it's coming from. And she dives in to rescue Sean. And she swims across. And she lifts him up. It's like she's saying, I can't get up. I can't get up. She couldn't climb onto the boat. And this big fucking shark. Like, have you ever seen Jaws? Like, it's a big thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can see it coming under the water and it goes right up and it just swallows a hole.
Come on, set him up on the boat! Come on! Come on! Come on!
And you hit a crunch, and that John Williams music. And I always just remember rewinding that and watching it again, and rewinding it and watching it again. And I'd be sitting on the floor on my knees with a big block of cheese. I used to eat big blocks of cheese.
Jesus Christ, go on.
I'm filling in the blanks here for you.
Yeah.
And my Aunt Phil was like, why do you watch that? I told her,
I know what to send you for Christmas now, actually. I know exactly what I'm going to send for Christmas. Okay, go on.
A babysitter.
And a big block of cheese. Go on.
But no, I used to just love that. You know, it was like a monster movie death scene. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd mention it just to take us, get us back on track, talking about happy things.
Get us back to happy thoughts. Happy thoughts. Yeah. I've only got two to mention, right? Two that are on my list that I thought I would mention. I'm getting close to the end here with my list, Kevin. How about you?
Yeah, I've got a few more, but they're not really that important to me to mention. They're not important to mention. Psycho, we've got to mention Psycho.
Of course, yeah. That's a sudden, shocking death. Yeah, absolutely.
When you think about great death scenes or memorable, enduring death scenes, that's probably right up there at the very top.
100%.
Children of Men, Julianne Moore getting killed in the car. Great for the technical quality.
I think the end of Logan, Wolverine's kind of sacrificial death, I think, is one of those heroic.
He didn't really die though. He's back in Deadpool and Wolverine.
I know.
They don't remind us.
Totally. The sudden death in Pulp Fiction, which is a really funny one, an abrupt one.
Yeah. Yeah.
The back of the car.
Oh, fuck's happening?
Oh, man.
Shit.
Oh, man, I shot Marvin in the face.
Why the fuck did you do that?
The Blob. I've mentioned The Blob on the Horror Octobers, and the death of the character you think is going to be the lead, Donovan Leitch.
Yeah.
Where he's just swallowed by The Blob and he's dissolved in front of Shawnee Smith. Shawnee Smith, is it?
Yeah. I think you're right, yeah. A brutal kill, the one in American History X, mouse on the edge of the curb.
Curb awful, stomped.
Awful. Curb stomped. Yeah. Awful, awful, awful. Right, yeah. Sudden death in The Departed, Martin Sheen's character.
Yeah.
That's a shocker.
People couldn't believe, because he just fell very slowly into frame.
Yeah. He was an anchor, an absolute anchor for him.
Dr. Strangelove is a funny one.
Oh, which one? The very end?
Slim Pickens writing the bomb.
Yeah, okay. The I'm reading the Stanley Kubrick book, actually, the moment today, which I mentioned in the last episode. Really enjoying it. I have one that I want to bring up because it only came to mind because we did the research for this.
One that you mentioned in the chat, or should I mention it? No.
I've never mentioned this anywhere. So the two I'm going to mention, I don't think I've ever mentioned, so it's not in the chat. So okay. You should bring up whatever is in that you... a brutal one. Yes.
Yeah, so you asked me in the chat, have we talked about The Hitcher on Mike?
Yes.
And okay, I said to you, and this is the God's honest truth, whenever I'm reminded of that film, I can feel that death scene. I can feel it in my body. It conjures up such an awful fucking sensation where it's just like, oh, God. So you know if you see something disgusting and you just want to throw up, it's like it's in the back of your throat. But I feel it in my lower back. It's like, oh, good God. And it's a dead scene that happens off screen. But it's the implication of it and it's the sound of it. But
you feel like you've seen it. You feel like you've seen the scene, but you actually haven't seen the images.
Gruesome of a thought. It's a character. Can we spoil it?
I think we can. I think we can.
So Jennifer Jason Leigh is tied between two trucks and chained up, and she basically gets pulled apart at the end. Mm. And it's the implication, as Dennis would say.
Because of the implication.
Of that, the imagery.
Mm-hmm.
It is so gruesome.
Yeah.
It's the only death scene. I'd never watch Bone Tomahawk again, but I can sort of stomach any usual death scene.
Yeah.
But that is just like, oh, it's bloody awful.
That whole film fills me with this overpowering sense of dread from the very beginning. You know, when we go into where our character, the kid who's driving on the highway, kind of stumbles upon murder scenes and you see the aftermath of what Rutger Hauer's The Hitcher character has done to people. It's so, again, the implication of how the film presents
definitely
it is so horrifying and grotesque and terrifying that it really gets under your skin. And that's why I think it's a very effective film, a really effective film. If you haven't seen The Hitcher, it's fucking hell. It's still potent to this day, I do feel.
We've recommended it on the Horror October. I cannot remember which volume it is, but if you have a look at the artwork, you can see which one we mentioned it in.
Yeah.
We should mention, before I mention my pick, Dario Argento. Because his kills in his films, they're so operatic and over the top and campy, but they're unforgettable. So for a certain contingent of people who love horror films, Dario Argento is probably the king of the kill scene.
Mm, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, and we should mention fucking Friday the 13th. Fucking Nightmare on Elm Street. Johnny Depp's dead scene in that. Or Tina's dead in the beginning. I remember seeing that as a kid and thinking, Jesus, that's spectacular. And then he did it again in Wes Craven's New Nightmare. And I thought, wow, that's brilliant that you can do a riff on your own ideas.
I still haven't seen New Nightmare. I have to find New Nightmare and I have to watch it. It's just, it's definitely has to happen.
Come on, stay awake. Stay awake for me, Dylan. I want you to stay awake, okay? Stay awake. Keep your eyes open. Here you go. Dylan, what's the matter?
Truly, behind you.
I'd be curious to know if you'd like it.
An honorable mention for me
is a film that I saw on the screen, on a big screen, actually. And I found the whole experience of the film to be kind of be physically and emotionally exhausting to watch. And that was the filmmaker's intention, which culminates with a kill, with a really brutal kill. But it's cathartic because it was almost like a release. But I admired it, and I felt every gasp and every breath and every wrenching, like, you know, sticking of the knife.
Bambi.
It's the revenge kind of final kill in The Revenant, that Leonardo DiCaprio film.
Yeah.
One where he finally catches up with Tom Hardy's character and they have a showdown on the ice, on this frozen river. And it's a wonner. It's a wonner. It's brutal. And it's just, you can feel it. You can feel the sweat and the spit and just the ickiness of it.
Tom Hardy plays great villains. He's so good at it.
He's also one of the, in real life, he's one of these taekwondos or judo, you know, champion or whatever it is, like, you know. But he's just like an animal. And he's got a great grizzled, kind of like hardened, harsh face. But fucking hell, that film was so harrowing. Fucking harrowing, like, you know. And
it jumps out to me when you remind me of that film is the scalping.
The scalping scene, yeah.
And it just happens, it's in the distance. You just get the implication of it again. It's like, oh God, I hate the thought of that. Horrible.
Mm-hmm. And you actually, in that fight with Tom Hardy, you actually can see Tom Hardy's head half, it's like, you know, like healed from being scalped. And it's just like, oh, it's so, oh God, what? It makes you feel glad that you live in the time that you do live in.
Yeah.
But there's a real catharsis.
Dying around us, and 73% of all life on the planet in our lifetime is gone.
It'll get fixed somehow. A magic wand will appear.
You cannot bring things back from extinction. Once they're gone, they're gone.
That's true. Yeah, that is true.
Why do you keep bumming me out?
We started as such a high note and a happy note with you talking about, I don't know, actually, not the average word, it was something before that. That's my kind of an honourable mention for me. It's not my pick. So I'm going to toss it back to you, and I want to find out what is your favourite, or what are you picking as your best kill scene for this topic?
So this is one of those topics which it's fun to talk about, but it's overwhelming to think about, because there are, honestly, maybe 1,000 amazing kill scenes, death scenes, characters being offed across all of cinema. And when I was doing my list, it was like, oh Jesus, it was endless. I was going through dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of options. A lot of them we'd already mentioned in some capacity elsewhere. I didn't bring up Brad Pitt being killed in The Counselor, which was gruesome and so unforgettable for me. They're scattered across all genres. Action films have got great death scenes, thrillers, kids films even have them. We didn't mention like moments like in Roger Rabbit, because we talked about that with The Dip.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're everywhere. Wizard of Oz, The Death of the Witch, all that kind of stuff. And then horror films, all the slasher films, the great protracted, that's what they're sold on. It's like the suspense of, is this character going to make it? Are they not? But I decided to go with one where it felt satisfying as a final offing of a boss, a big boss, a villain.
Okay.
And I said at the beginning of the episode, the ones I'm less excited by are the obligatory getting rid of the bad guy at the end, the face-off, the hero versus the villain. They've gone through all these different traps and counter moves between the two of them. Who's going to get the upper hand? What's going to happen? And I thought, well, I've never talked about this film as a final pick. And it's not the most spectacular death, but it's one that everyone everywhere can imagine in their head and knows it.
Yippee-ki-yay, right. Motherfucker.
I actually still don't know where you're going with this. What is it?
It's the death of Hans Gruber at the end of Die Hard, when he is dropped out the window and he's clinging on to the gold watch that Holly was given. And that's been the sort of the symbolic item that's been a barrier between Holly and John finding a common ground and a unity. John has sort of, he's gone through all of his awakenings by fighting, killing terrorists, and he's realized that he's too hard-headed and what he's got is too important to lose. And at the very end, Hans Gruber's holding onto that watch. He unclasps the watch, setting Holly free, reuniting the two of them, and Hans Gruber in that great slow-mo shot just falls to his death. And it's like when you think of all those 80s and 90s action villain offings, that's the best one. And it's so simple, it's so elegant, and it's such a great way to kill that character. You couldn't kill Hans Gruber by shooting him or blowing him up or anything. He has to fall from grace.
Well, I hope that's not a hostage.
And it's a great stunt scene.
Yeah.
And all the sort of the background behind it, where Alan Rickman was taken all the way up 100 feet and they told him they were going to drop him on 5 and they dropped him on 3 to get that reaction, and he did one take. And it's great. And even though I remember John McTiernan pointing out something where it speaks to the fastidiousness of some directors, where it's like, oh, that doesn't matter. I remember Richard Donner when they did that famous shot of Christopher Reeve flying out of the Fortress of Solitude and he banks past the camera, and Richard Donner was like, oh, but he flies into a shadow, so he goes out of the light for a brief spot. It's like, that doesn't matter at all. It's a great shot, it looks great. In fact, that adds to the realism of it. And John McTiernan said about the death scene to Hans Gruber that he wishes that the tie didn't fall in front of Alan Rickman's face as he's falling. But I'm like, yeah, but that adds a little grace note to the reality of the situation.
Yeah. But
Die Hard is probably the perfect action movie. It inspired a whole subgenre of Die Hard on this and Die Hard on that. And of all the ones that followed, none of them had as good of a death scene for their villain. Cliffhanger, where John Lithgow's been crushed in a helicopter. They all got bigger and more explosive, but that's such a beautiful, graceful death for a fantastic villain.
Yeah, it was a shot that was photocopied by so many other films. RoboCop tried to do it really poorly with that long-armed, what's his
RoboCop
name?
RoboCop came first.
Oh, RoboCop came first, you're right. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, long arms. So Die Hard copied RoboCop and just made it better. That's what happened there.
It did.
Well, that is a great pick. And for my pick, we've had revenge kills, we've had sudden kills, we had brutal kills, traumatic kills, things that have just, you know, stuck with us for life. I've been traumatized in the making of this podcast episode alone. Thank you very much, Bone. Tomahawk. Inventive and creative kills in the Final Destination series, mass kills. But I've always enjoyed the ones that are really stylish and slick and satisfying and just entertaining.
As opposed to the ones which are not entertaining, not stylish.
The traumatizing, brutal, tragic ones.
Oh, I get you. So you're going for ones where they're heightened rather than realistic.
Stylish, satisfying. My pick is one that's choreographed beautifully, underscored with a beautiful piece of music. Devil is in the Detail.
Give me a genre.
It's a gangster movie.
Okay. All right.
It's from a pair of filmmakers.
Yeah, I know where you're going. I'm not going to jump the gun, though.
It's from Miller's Crossing.
And it's
the scene where Albert Finney turns the tables on his potential executors. What an amazing scene. How beautifully blocked it is. Again, there's moments of implication where we have the bodyguard who's downstairs in Albert Finney's mansion. We just hear him gargling and the camera pans and we see the body falling over sideways with his hand holding a cigarette to a newspaper. And as we see the assassins disappear down the corridor, you see the newspaper light up, and in the detail of like seeing the flame grow and grow and grow closer to the actor's hand, I'm just assuming that actor's hand was burned for real. But as they march up the stairs, Albert Finney is just laying back in his bed in his lovely silk robe and his pajamas, smoking a cigar with his half moon spectacles on, just enjoying the beautiful airing song of Danny Boy coming from his radio. And he sees the smoke just coming up through the cracks in the floorboard, and slick as anything, he gets up, rises from his bed, slips both feet into the slippers, and he
turns the tables, slides under the bed, shoots from under the bed, takes out two guys, shoots them in the leg. One guy drops to the ground and shoots him in the head. It's so brutal in that moment. But the fact then that he's able to, he has the presence of mind to throw the Tommy gun out the window, climb out the window, slide down the rooftop, and just gun the fucker down from ground level. It's so incredibly satisfying. It's so incredibly well put together.
It helps that it's Albert Finney as well.
Oh, and when he turns the gun on the car, on the getaway car, and he's just marching out, coolly marching out onto the street with that Tommy gun, not blinking, just totally focused. And the guys in the car are shooting back at him, and he's not reacting to the bullets that are just pinging off the tarmac beside him. But, oh, and the pièce de résistance of him at the end, he's turned the tables, killed his executors or potential executors, and he just reaches into his pocket and he takes out a cigar. It's cool as anything. It's so satisfying. It's so wonderful. It's perfect. Absolutely perfect in my eyes. I love it. I absolutely adore that film. I love that scene from that film. It's my favorite kill scene, Gavin.
And I will sleep in peace until you come to me.
We have done kill scenes. It's in the bag.
Oh,
we've learned a lot more about Kevin than we thought we ever would in this episode.
We have. That's the main thing, is that the episode's about me.
And as usual now, we've kind of thrown it up to our patrons, but I think we're going to go back to the wheel for this one, Kevin, aren't we?
We are. If you want to write in and give us a scene suggestion, you can leave us a voice note or you can just write us an email. Let's go to bestbitspodcast.com/contact. We've had a few in there. Unfortunately, they're very fucking research-heavy scene themes. And I want to do them when I know that I've got like a couple of weeks to be able to prepare for them, be able to pull them off. But yeah, you may as well spin the wheel.
So here we go. I'm going to click it now. Okay, here we go.
It's getting quite thin, that wheel.
Yeah,
there's not that many left.
We've taken an awful lot of big categories here, and it's spinning. Okay, that's a good one.
Let's do it.
Yeah, your topic and both of our topics for the next time is best road trip scene.
Okay, that's something we've not done before. Yeah. Road trips.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Road trip comedies. I love a good road trip. That's almost like a more relaxed version of an adventure story.
I've written a couple of road trip movies.
You have?
So it's, So it'll be good to just talk all about my films.
I'm looking forward to seeing them.
All of them, yeah. I'll send you the screeners. Hey, where can people find us and support us, and how can they go about supporting us, Kevin?
The usual places, you tell them.
Well, come on over to thebestbitspodcast.com. That's where you find all our past episodes and stuff like that, and subscribe to us. Please, if you're using Apple or Spotify or whatever, give us a rating. And, you know, if you have an extra minute, give us a review, because that helps us with the algorithms. If you feel like getting extra episodes from us, our mini bits episodes and all the other stuff, and joining our Discord, come on over and be a patron. It's pretty much less than the price of a coffee a month, and you can get all our bonus shows. So you get double us. These aren't small throwaway episodes. They're pretty substantial media episodes that you can get.
You'll hear a clip at the end of this episode. That's usually like the beginning of one of the interstitial episodes, where we just talk about stuff that we've been up to and watching. We just came back from Kilkenny, where we did a live show.
Yes.
Kind of like a live show, but it was us doing a speech for the Cartoon Saloon folks celebrating their 25th anniversary. And that mini bits, you've got clips in there from us being on stage, trying to make people laugh, and it was good fun. So please become a patron. It absolutely helps. Please engage with the podcast wherever you can. It definitely helps. And if you love us, let people know, because there's a lot more people out there who don't know we exist that we know would enjoy the podcast, and we can't reach them. Only you can. So you're our little avatars. So please help us out.
Help.
Yes, help. That'll do, Will.
That was a very entertaining episode.
I did. I enjoyed it. I knew it would be good crack. And for those that are listening to us on the day of release, Happy Halloween.
There we go. Happy Halloween, everyone. Bye-bye.
Take care.
The Best Bits podcast is produced by Will and Kevin. All audio clips and music heard in this episode is the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders and no infringement is intended.
If you enjoyed this episode, please consider becoming a Patreon member, where you'll receive bonus shows where we talk about recent releases and what we're up to.
And you'll receive access to our Discord chat room where we hang out with our listeners.
Search the Best Bits podcast on Patreon or click on the link in the show notes.
And here is a clip from the lads' latest Mini Bits bonus show. The full episode, plus 100 more, are available on their Patreon.
Mini Bits.
In a haunted studio, on a dark and stormy night, two screenwriters named Will and Kev are getting on the mic. Talk
Films TV
with foolish glee, doing it for the crack and conjure laughs from witches ghee.
People think I'm
bad. It's the Best Bits with Will and Kev.
It's the best podcast in the whole damn world.
Agree to disagree. It's the Best Bits with Will and Kev.
Subscribe to the podcast
and make us shock your soul
for 3 euros.
Hello, Will.
Mini Bits.
Hello, Kevin.
Raw.
What's going on?
Not much. We're just back from the UK where we won Best Film and TV Podcast at the Independent Podcast Awards.
By winning, do you mean not win or steal?
Nobody's going to fact check. Nobody's going to fact check. Just, you know, just tell them any. The way it is right now, there are so many fucking films and TV shows out there. You can just tell people that you're working on this show and it's called Bullet Time and it's on Apple. And yeah, 8 episodes, you're show running it. And they'd be like, oh my God, I must check that out. I must look out for that. They'll never look for it. They'll never see it. And they'll just go away thinking, oh, they're quite busy. So, so we won the Best Film and TV. Commiserations to Cinema. Yeah.
I thought you made an amazing acceptance speech.
Yeah, I did. I just thanked myself. So, you know.
Yeah, which I thought was amazing. Amazingly arrogant.
That's not like me at all. What are you talking about? No, it was a good night, though.
It was a great night. I thoroughly enjoyed myself. And I really enjoyed the fact that I got to meet so many podcasters. Podcasts I listen to and meet so many podcasters I've never heard of their podcast, you know, never heard of them whatsoever, probably will never subscribe, but it was nice to meet
I bet you they felt Dave's, the exact same about us.
Oh, definitely. Dave the from the Cinema Mile, who him and Kathy, they won the actual award, which was in a way it was kind of like it was a Cork win. Is a win for Cork. That's the way I was looking at it.
Yeah, tell yourself whatever you need to tell yourself. I'm still raging, fucking raging. Anyway, congratulations to them. Done. Next year, don't enter. Fuck's sake.
Anyone.
Yeah. It's Halloween, or it's right on the cusp of Halloween. And I thought, well, what I would do is I'd ask you some questions that might get us in the Halloween spirit, because you just heard that lovely theme tune there for me. I've been holding on to that one for a few months now. So excited.
Like a furious shit ready to explode.
Yeah.
Go on.
I only do these mini bits so I can release the themes. I've got so many banked.
Yeah.
All right. What's the horror film or TV episode that freaked you out the most as a kid, and does it still hold up?
The horror film or TV episode that freaked me out as a kid.
Go with TV, actually, because we've talked about films, so give us a TV episode.
Probably, well, okay, I would say V, right? Would you consider V to be horror? Do you remember that?
I remember the funeral episode and that. I tried to find that episode as well, because it stuck out so much to me, and I couldn't, my memory of it was kind of corrupted from what it was, but there was a moment where a character was placed inside a glass coffin and they were still alive and they were shot out to space and they were having this funeral, and it was really eerie. They were like inside the glass coffin. I'm going, please, please, no, please.
Oh, they were still alive.
Yeah, I think they were in the coffin with somebody else. They were like a traitor, or they found out. And they were inside the glass coffin as they slowly jettisoned it into space. And it was like, what a horrible ending.
I just recall this. I'm surprised you remember it in such detail, because I remember being very small when that was on the television. And I just remember...
But it was repeated for ages. It was on Sky.
Was it? Oh, you see, I never saw it on Sky. I only saw it like whenever it first appeared on RT. And so this was early 80s, mid 80s, I suppose. And I remember, all I remember is one of the aliens ripping off their mask, and it felt like they're ripping their skin off. And I remember freaking out at my mother, going, oh, tell me when it's over, I don't want to see it. And like, I really wanted to watch it, and I remember she was trying to console me. And
would your mom say this? Is this like, here's another thing for you, right? There are certain phrases that I thought were common knowledge,
right?
And then I come to learn that it's just my mom garbling shit.
Okay,
so she would say to me, that's only Machia.
Oh, no, we would say not Machia. We would say, that's only Maria. Maria by the boy. We would say Maria.
No, Machia. It's only Machia.
No, I would never say Machia, but I've heard Maria. Or Maria. Mm. You know, that's only Maria.
So that's another thing where it's like, maybe it's just my mum's garbled it, but it's only Machia. It's nothing to be, it's all pretend, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't worry about it. Maria, I think they probably are coming from the same place, whatever. Maybe my family had it wrong completely. Maria.
No, Maria is the actual proper Irish for it, but I think it got corrupted. And yeah, Maria is Gaelic. Oh no, shouldn't say that. It's Osquelga.
Ah, I didn't know. Actually, I genuinely didn't know. I just always just knew the word for
what it
was.
Do people get very offended if you say Gaelic when you mean Irish?
Really?
Oh yeah.
Is it Gaelga?
Can't do that. Guelga.
Oh God. So that I'm saying V. I'm also saying the episode of The Twilight Zone where it's a family in a house and they come downstairs and they pull the curtains and it's just black. They're like completely sealed in their house is sealed in complete blackness and they're trapped there. And it follows them as they run out of food and whatnot, and they cannot break through this solid mass that's surrounding their house. I remember that freaking me out. Just trying that.
That reminds me of being stoned in LA, where I thought the only thing that was real was what I could see, and everything beyond it was a facade. It was a void. Yeah. So I was like in a set. Everything was like set walls, you know.
Yeah.
And if I was able to peek behind it, there was nothing there. It was freaking me out. Oh. It was freaking my nut out. I can't remember what TV shows would have scared me, but I do remember the Twilight Zone film. I only saw the opening few minutes of it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I've spoken about this, but the trailers were playing all the time on the telly. I would have been very young now, about 5. And I sat at the top of the stairs while the Twilight Zone movie was starting on the telly.
Yeah.
And I watched from the top of the stairs, peeking down at the TV, as Dan Aykroyd is recounting a story to the passenger in the car. And he's like, pull over.
Yeah.
Do you want to see something really scary? That freaked me the fuck out, and I ran down the stairs and I was like, oh my God. They were like, what are you watching? If I should be watching this, go back to bed. But yeah,
I remember cutting when you cut a scene in for an episode. I remember cutting that scene in and trying to get it lined up and whatnot. It must have been season 1 because it was Audacity, I think.
Have to be, because you were editing.
That was season 1 and editing in Audacity. Brain surgery, that's what it was. What's your next question?
Which horror villain would you stand the best chance against?
Ooh, horror villain. Okay. Which horror villain?
I'd love to go up against Chucky. I'd love to go up against him because I kicked the shit out of him.
Chucky's smart. Chucky's got plots. He's ready for you. You might think one-on-one you're going to take out Chucky, but I think Chucky's always got some sort of
I know, but I'd still love to punch something small.
I
have to bait the shit out of it. Or a leprechaun.
Remind me never to have you babysit my children, Kevin. That's all I'm saying.
You'd actually find me hiding in the closet crying. They just kept running around screaming.
I'm trying to think. I definitely don't want to face off against Freddy Krueger. Michael Myers.
You wouldn't have a shot against Freddy. You're fucked. You're in your dreams. You're basically helpless.
Jason Voorhees, no. Candyman, no. Wouldn't chance it. Anything that's got a bit of a magical kind of element about it, that's freaking me out.
Isn't it weird though that there were no sexy nightmares in the Nightmare on Elm Street films?
No sexy nightmares. Were there not? Because I've only ever seen a couple of them. Really?
I'd be like, you know, oh my God, what's Freddy doing in an orgy? Oh, Jesus. Here he comes for me.
I think I'd have to go back to like the Universal horror era and like think of someone like the Mummy. Like, you know.
Mangle Cujo. Because he was only a Saint Bernard.
Is that all he was? Oh, yeah. The car.
The dog. I didn't know anything.
I was thinking, my brain jumped onto the car, whatever the car was called again.
The car. There was a film called The Car.
Yeah, but no, it was the Stephen King one. There was the...
Yeah, Days of Thunder.
Yeah, I love that one. I love that one. I'm going...
I love the soundtrack to Christine.
I think I might go with Frankenstein or something like that, because I think I could take Frankenstein with a bulldozer or some sort of bit of heavy machinery. I think it's slow. He's slow, lumbering. He doesn't have that many special powers. I think I could take Frankenstein.
Zombies. I think I could take zombies.
Yeah.
I mean, The Walking Dead, they were hanging around for years and years after, so it doesn't seem that much of a threat.
As long as you don't get at one. Yeah, I think zombies, I'm going
slow zombies.
I'm going Frankenstein.
Yeah. Okay, what about this one? If you could invite three horror icons to a Halloween party, who would you choose and why?
Three horror icons to a Halloween party. I would have to say Hannibal Lecter would be there. Because you just never know. You just kind of would, I don't know, you kind of be wondering what he'd get up to. He'd be a bit of a rascal, like, you know? He'd be a bit of a rascal. And he'd be a good conversationalist, the shit he would talk about. And he's got...
He'd be a good cook as well, you know?
A good cook. And he can play the piano, which I would like. I think good taste in music. So I think I'd Hannibal Lecter, definitely. I also would invite... I'm thinking... Who about you? That's one for me. Do you have one? Well, I think. How about you?
I'd probably invite Laurie Strode, and I'd invite
villains,
horror icons. So I'm going with Final Girls.
Stop it! We could all get the heroes from like.
Well, I'm not going to invite a bunch of bastards to the fucking party. That'd be shite. Tiffany from Chucky, I invite her because she'd be good crack.
You're doing that, I'm inviting Kurt Russell.
And I'd invite the Blob, you know, just for a bit of dynamism.
We all need a bouncy castle. I'd invite Kurt Russell from The Thing, just so I could just, you know, get lost in these.
I'd invite The Thing, you know, just to freak him out.
Yeah. Next question.
It could be anyone. That's it. There are the rest of them. They're not really that good. I got those from ChatGPT. So it was like...
Moral of the story.
Do horror films reflect our deepest fears? Where is it? Do you think horror films explore the nature of evil or just the fear of the unknown? That's a good answer. Anyway, what have you seen, Will?
Many bits.